We are pleased to have in studio via telephone the great jazz pianist Taylor Eichsti, who's one of my personal favorite musicians. Many years ago, he used to play at Joe and Wayne Siegel's Jazz Showcase, and I never got a chance to see him because I was either broke or at a conference. But this is just as good. How you doing, Taylor?
I'm doing great, and thanks for having me on. I just got back from the Patriots 49ers game, so I'm in a good mood.
I understand the 49ers won, so you're quite pleased with that.
Absolutely, it's been a good year for them. I grew up a big 49er fan, so always in my heart.
Taylor, how did you get started in music?
Well, I started when I was 4 years old, and I was really inspired by my sister Shannon, who played piano. She passed away when I was 3. But just kind of seeing her, and I grew up in a musical family, and they always played great music for me. My dad was a drummer for a hobby, and I got a really early start and started performing and doing gigs when I was about 8 or 9, and which is a little awkward playing in bars and that sort of thing. but, you know, I always had a love for music, and so I've been really, really fortunate to be able to, you know, make a living doing it and just continue on that path.
Who are some of your favorite influences in terms of your style of playing and performing?
Early on, I was more drawn to contemporary jazz, which later kind of became smooth jazz in a lot of ways. Like, in particular, David Benoit was an early influence. And I remember listening a lot to Dave Brubeck then, and he became then an influence. My dad took me to see a concert of his right before my dad passed away. I was 11 years old and saw Dave in concert, and I was blown away. We sat front row, and I'll always remember that. And the next year, I got a chance to play with Dave and started a great musical and, you know, personal relationship there with being friends with the whole Brubeck family. And I was so sad recently when Dave passed, but it's really amazing to see how his positive influence has just traveled all around the world. It just seems like everyone knows both what a great person he was, but also what a, you know, incredible, inspiring musician he was as well. But so, you know, those were a couple of my early influences. But then I, you know, over time, I just started listening to so many different other types of music. And I try to keep my taste as eclectic as possible. Music that at first I kind of don't understand or I don't like very much usually ends up being the music that I like the most. So I always say I give everyone 22 chances. So if I hear something and I don't like it, I can't make an opinion on it unless I've heard it 22 times. If I've heard it 22 times,
22 times.
And I still don't like it, I just don't like it then.
There you
but,
go.
You know, sometimes some people have caught my interest on the 21st listen, you know, and then you're like, oh, I get it now.
You mentioned Dave Brubeck a while back, and of course, you know, we lost Dave Brubeck a few weeks ago. He lived a very, very, very full life. What do you think that his legacy will be to this great American type of music?
The last time I saw him was a little less than a year ago. My wife and I went out to Connecticut to go visit him and have dinner with him and his wife, Iola, and his son, Chris, and his wife, Tish. And at the dinner table, he had a Casio keyboard that was just set up just in case he had any musical ideas. And it was right to the right of his dinner plate. And he had a keyboard in every single corner of the house. Everywhere you looked, there was always the chance to write an idea down and that sort of thing. And I think for me, he was a living reminder always of that you don't have to retire from this music and you don't have to stop making music at any point. He had, as you mentioned, a long, full life, but he used every bit of that to create. To me, that's really inspiring and one of the impacts that he leaves on me, but also how to conduct yourself just around other people and other musicians and how to treat people with respect. Mm-hmm. I was always blown away by his generosity, but his warmth as a human being. I really am not exaggerating when I say he was absolutely kind to everyone. And, you know, just as a young musician seeing that, you emulate the people that you look up to. And I think that was a very, very healthy thing for me just to see like, oh, wow, here's an old jazz legend that is totally not full of himself. And I mean, those are just important to mention, but obviously his musical impact speaks for itself. I think he made bold decisions in what type of music he wanted to play that really paved the way for a lot of other people to experiment with different time signatures in music that's accessible, but also interesting and unpredictable. His sense of harmonic movement is very unique to himself and really just paved the way for a legacy of just all sorts of harmonizations of things. His chords were always one of my favorite parts of hearing him, how hard he swung his, mm-hmm. his chords, and all of that. But it's inextricable, his influence on me and certainly the entire jazz world. And he'll always be remembered.
Taylor, you have quite an impressive library yourself. Tell us about some of your work.
I guess I was one of those people that there's a school of thought when you're a young musician to just wait and wait and wait and wait until you feel ready to do a record. And, I mean, if I went back and listened to my very first record, I think it was good that I made the decision to start recording early because I think it allows people to hear a progression. You start at a place, you're informed by the music that you listen to, and then as you grow older and get more mature and listen to more music and develop your sound and all of that, and believe me, I, in no way, shape, or form am I comparing myself at all to Coltrane, but I always loved to get a chance to see the progression of his different albums, how he changed his sound over mm-hmm. time, and mm-hmm. each couple of years, it's like he would have an entirely new sound, you know, that would be incorporated and things like that. And so on a much, much, much smaller level, I think it's a good thing in the long run. I don't regret recording really early on because I think it allows people to at least hear, like, hey, I'm a little better now. And
yeah, we're going to be playing a tune called Woke Up This Morning from your album, Lucky to Be Me. I put it in rotation before, but I definitely wanted to put that number into the Christmas show because Christmas Eve is the night that a lot of kids find it hard to get to sleep.
Right.
What are your hopes for the holiday season, Taylor?
Well, I definitely hope that there's a sense of unity felt amongst us as citizens, certainly in light of the recent tragedy in Connecticut. It's definitely a time that people realize how important it is to just express their love and friendship for each other while we have the opportunity, because something like that is entirely random and awful, and
it is.
You never know about how unpredictable life can be, and it's important that while we are around each other that we reach out and don't miss the chance to tell each other that we love each other. So I think that that's something that's in the forefront of my brain this particular season.
Well, Taylor, we're going to play a tune from your album Lucky to Be Me, a tune called Woke Up This Morning, and I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart and from the WKMS family and our listening area for taking out the time to talk with us this afternoon, and I want to wish you and your family on behalf of us the happiest of holiday seasons.
Well, thank you so much, and the same to you, and stay warm and all of that.
Thanks, Taylor. Merry Christmas, brother.
Thank you. Merry Christmas.